Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon. How are you on this Tuesday afternoon? Thanks so much to Catherine and to Brenda for keeping the seat warm over the last few weeks. I have to admit, I feel like I haven't done this before. And you're shouting at the radio saying, you always sound like you haven't done it before, Ray. Particularly this time. I think that's the longest holiday I've had in an awful long time. 3 days and 1 week. Anyway, it was good to be away. It's great to be back. And you can contact us here, 51551, ray@rte.ie. A special mention this afternoon for my home county, County Kildare, who are still in lockdown. So spare a thought for them. And also, I suppose, a bit of a silver lining in that there are people in Europe who had never heard of Kildare before, are now looking at it on the map and saying its name out loud. Ursula von der Leyen is saying, Kildare, he was in Kildare. And then he went to Galway. And then he went to Kilkenny. And then he was in Portlaoise. And then he went here and there and everywhere. It's a bit odd that they're taking his account of it, isn't it? There's no independent observer here. He's just, it's like, you know, why haven't you got your homework done? I'll write you an essay as to why I haven't got my homework done, you see. Yeah, it was there on the kitchen table and then we all went out for a walk and when we came back, the dog had bits of paper hanging out of his mouth. And now he wouldn't usually do that, the dog. He's a lovely dog. He wouldn't usually eat paper because we feed him well. But this particular evening, he must have been hungry, teacher. And he ate my homework. And that's the story. Oh, well, that's it. If you say it, it must be true. If you say it, it must be true. That's the sort of thing they're doing, isn't it? They're making a lot of his use of words. We haven't mentioned his name yet. Do we have to? PH. In the Irish Times today, because in one of the many statements he's made over the last few days, they reckon it's 9 statements and 9 tweets and a number of apologies. He referred to a fulsome and profound apology. And they're saying that the use of the word fulsome was wrong. That you shouldn't use the word. I'll just give you an example here. It says, Phil Hogan, the Minister for Education, the Taoiseach and others might do well to check the dictionary definition of fulsome before they next use the word. I would much prefer genuine or sincere, said David Nisbet from Infarnham in Dublin. So I looked up the dictionary definition of fulsome and it says complimentary or flattering to an excessive degree. The press are embarrassingly fulsome in their appreciation. So you probably not the word you'd use along with an apology. Of large size or quantity, generous or abundant. So I offer you a large-sized, generous and abundant apology. I suppose you could sort of say that. They made a lot of that. The other word that I'm fascinated by over the last few days is hubris. You know, the definition of that, exaggerated pride or self-confidence. There's a word, hubris. There's a lot of that about. An awful lot of that about. I don't know how it's going to pan out. You see, we sort of, not that we need him in Europe, but it's a good time to have a man in that position, fighting our corner in Europe. He probably knows that. Well, he does know it. He knows it. And then when you go to Europe and you're talking about this huge, like nearly a federal state, all these countries, all these millions of people, and then you come back home to little old Ireland with 4.8 million, you must feel sort of, you're above it all. Do you? You must feel sort of. Well, I'm over in Europe making decisions that affect millions and millions of people. Is that the way it works? Anyway, words. Yeah, words are important. I see Susie Dent, who's the queen of words. Her word of the day today is autumnity. Autumnity. A quality that hints of autumn, as in the shift from warmth to an early chill. Now, I'd never be one to, contradict Susie Dent. But the first thing I noticed when I opened the door this morning at about, 10 to 8, was how warm it was. It was actually nearly balmy this morning. And I know it rained a lot and it's still raining in a lot of places overnight, but there's a humidity out today and a balminess that doesn't suggest a shift from warmth to an early chill. So maybe Susie was a bit premature with her autumnity. It's a nice word though, isn't it? Autumnity, because you're getting the N in there that's sort of silent when you say autumn. Autumnity, there you go. when I was out for my run this morning, I saw a woman taking pictures of trees. Now, I don't know what she was doing. And then what happens is then you go somewhere, don't you? Why is she taking pictures of trees? And then I thought, well, maybe this is UCD. Maybe she's studying them. Or maybe she's just got a job in some sort of groundskeeping capacity in UCD, and she needs to familiarise herself with all the trees. So she's going to take pictures of them and then go back and refer to her tree book and make sure she knows all the names of all the trees in UCD. I don't know why she was doing, but she was. She was taking a lot of pictures of a lot of trees. Fascinated to know what she was doing, but might never know. Now, it's obvious that we live in a small country and you can't go anywhere without people recognising you. So now we know he was in Limerick as well. And I know that Alan has been on to ray@rte.ie. That's the email address, ray@rte.ie. Quick question. Were you on the Greenway last Sunday on a racer bike? Reason being, we were on the Greenway going towards Kilmacthomas, approximately 10:30, passing Kilmeaden, when a person looking very much like you passed on the bike towards Kilmeaden. I said to the others, and they think I'm mad. Could you verify this? Thank you, Alan. Alan, yes, I was on the Greenway last Sunday morning, and I think I was obeying all the rules because I don't live in Kildare anymore. I live in Dublin. I was down in Waterford, which isn't on lockdown, and I was on the Greenway, and I was exercising social distancing. Yes, so I was on the Greenway at 10:30. You were right, Alan. It's odd the way people approach it, because I was in the water in the sea there down near Dunmore East over the last few weeks, and somebody said to me, you look very like your man, Ray Darcy, you see. And then this woman said, yes, you do. You do. You could be a double for him. And I said, I wouldn't say there's much need for Ray Darcy lookalikes, I said back to the woman. Then she winked. And your man said, you're probably right there. He swam off and she laughed. I don't know who knew what or where. But they're the sort of things that happen. The other thing that happened was I lost my glasses, my reading glasses. I was reading on the beach and left them behind. And Alicia Moore, who's a lifeguard down there, found them for me. And she's contacted the show. So thanks very much, Alicia. And she sent them up in the post. The Ray Darcy Show, RT, Donnybrook, Dublin 4. And thank you so much for that. And we'll send you down a Mogra T-shirt or something like that. And on lifeguards, great picture on the cover of the Examiner today. And it brings us nicely on to three of our guests. There's Damien and Murrahy O'Donovan. And they were saved from the water in Fountainstown in County Cork by Paddy Quinlan and others. Paddy was the first one on the scene. And in a way, a bit like the paddleboard incident a couple of weeks ago, Damien was desperately holding on to a boy as he was being pulled out to sea when Paddy canoed out. Paddy's a member of the local RNLI and brought Murrahy to safety, and then a boat with a number of teenagers came along and rescued Damien. Anyway, the reason I'm drawing your attention to this is that we have three members of the RNLI on today, Damien and Mike and Kieran. And they've been in the news a lot. They're doing some great work all the time. So we're going to find out what brings a person to volunteer for the RNLI. What's it like having a pager that you're on call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and all those other things. And that's a great picture. And well done to Paddy and everybody else who saved Damien and Murrahy O'Donovan. And there's lovely detail in that story, in that Murrahy, I think, is aged 8 or 9. Damien, his dad, was trying to distract them from the predicament they were in, because they were in a predicament. He was holding on to a boy with two fingers, and he was desperately holding on to Murrahy, who he had trapped between his legs. And he was trying to distract him. And he was talking about, look, we're gonna be fine. We're going to get home. We're going to watch the Champions League final tonight. And it's all going to be good. Meanwhile, Damien knew that he was holding on for dear life, with his two fingers, and he was running out of energy. But it all was a happy ending in the end. Football, Champions League. There's a nice thing doing the rounds today. It's about, without revealing your age, who was your very first favourite footballer? It's a talk sport thing. And by naming your favourite footballer, you can nearly predict within a year or two what age you are. So Alan Ball would have been the first footballer that I was aware of and sort of liked, and collecting the cards and all that sort of thing. I was an Everton fan. And I was just looking back, and they won the title back in 1970. And there's a famous picture, not a famous, famous in our house, of all the three lads, Huey, myself and Joe, in our strips. Huey was Manchester United, Joe was Chelsea, and I had the Everton strip, the blue, the white shorts and the orange socks. And Alan Ball was the man anyway. So it must be to do with the fact that you become aware of football and footballers at the age of 6 or 7. And as a result, if you were to remember your first favourite footballer, that's when you were 6 or 7. And you can do the maths on that and figure out what age you are. That's a clever one, isn't it? That's a clever one. Colm O'Regan, we're having him in today as well. And he's talking about petrol stations. Now, not these big yokes, which are brilliant. I've stopped at a number of them over the last few weeks, alongside motorways, where you can get your petrol, a coffee, a book. You can get some Thai food or McDonald's or Burger King or Supermax or whatever you want, and drive away, and it's all very comfortable and clean. Now, he's talking about the ones that used to have the two pumps outside somebody's house. And oddly, in this country, you'd have them in the middle of nowhere. Like, you'd be driving along and they're like an oasis. You just have the petrol station, nothing else. No houses or anything close to it. And the petrol station would be there, and you'd pull in and you'd get your petrol from the woman of the house. She's probably in the back watching the 6 o'clock news, and she'd have to come out and fill the... And we're going to be talking about that, the fact that they're sort of disappearing. And it's another aspect of rural Ireland that we're going to regret losing in the future. Anyway, 51551 radio.rte.ie. Last year, a texture show complaining about paying €190 for Cher concert and having to listen to shop assistant girls and bank clerks singing along to every song and not getting much sympathy from you. Uh-huh, sorry. A year later, what a change. It would be a treat to be at a concert and, yes, listen to the sing-along gang. That's Frank in lockdown in Kildare. You see how our priorities change. Why didn't you ask... One, why she was taking pictures of trees. I ask people what they're doing loads of times, and I found out very interesting information. That's a good one, isn't it? Why are you taking pictures of trees? I should have. Too much humidity, not enough humility around today. Hey, I like that, Anne. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yes. Humidity, no humility, loads of hubris. Nothing balmy about the weather here at the moment. Down south, blowing up a storm, raining, trees down, no electricity. So enjoy Storm Francis is on the way, says John. Saw you in the water there in Dunmore East, jumping the waves with your son the day after the storm. That was good crack. That's John there. And the lady who was photographing the trees could even be an artist. I've taken many photos of trees, says Liz. Aha, there you go. What about Emma? Wow, we had a night with Emma and a trampoline. I'll save that for tomorrow. Don't tell you all my stories on the first day. Anyway, 51551, ray@rte.ie. Which will I play here? Good afternoon. Suzanne Vega and DNA, Tom's Diner. I was going to play the original. You know, the one with no beats, that one.
I am waiting at the counter for the man to pour the coffee, and he fills it only halfway, and before I even argue, he is looking out the window at somebody coming in. It is always nice to see you, says the man behind the counter to the woman
nice. Who has come in. If you have a moment this evening, you might, if you have Spotify, or get out the old CD and play it. Tom's Diner, Suzanne Vega. Great voice. Great songwriter too. Check Alistair Campbell's Instagram page. He puts pics up of trees every day. Tree of the day from all around the world. Ah, didn't know that. Wasn't Vincent Brown into trees at one stage? He probably still is. Are you announcing the results of the garden competition today? We are. Jerry Daly's in after 4 o'clock. It's been going on forever. But today's the day. We have €5,000 to give away. To the lucky winners of our garden competition. 5 categories and €1,000 for each category. So that's coming up after 4 o'clock in the company of Jerry Daly. I'm always taking photographs of trees. They fascinate me. Bernie in very wet, windy Newbridge. And no petrol pump outside houses as years ago. For health and safety reasons, you had to have flammable liquid so many metres away from buildings, hence all gone. Cheers, Vincent. Ah, so it was health and safety things that changed it. And of course, the layout of roads, remember the time when you're driving from Dublin to Cork, you had to go through Naas, Newbridge, Kildare, Monasterevin, Portlaoise. My mum had a small country shop with one petrol pump. Many nights you would hear a knock on her bedroom window. Maggie, Jim. Jim here. Would you mind turning on the pump? Because I'm going to town in the morning. And up she got, turned on the pump. They filled it themselves and paid her a few days later. Happy, simple times. And I would like to thank all the people over the years that I've knocked on their doors coming back from a disco in Clonakilty or Castlebar or Ballyshannon in the middle of the night. You'd look at the gauge and it'd be down, and then you'd pull into some small town and notice the petrol pumps outside the house and you knock on the door. Sorry, I'm really sorry, but I'm stuck. And they'd say, okay. And they'd fill her up. Regarding the fast disappearing petrol stations around the country, please check out our Facebook page, The Golden Age of Irish Garages. I'll start that again. The Golden Age of Irish Garages, Petrol Stations and Motor Assembly. We have lots of pics of stations long gone with plenty of pumps outside pubs, houses, etc. We'll check that out. Now, 51551 ray@rte.ie. And we have to take a quick commercial break.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 or ray@rte.ie. Happy anniversary, says somebody. We got married the same year as you in the same wedding venue in Meath, a week after you. Also went to Portugal on honeymoon, and we are just on our way back from Waterford Greenway. I swear we are stalking you, but funny coincidences. Yeah, it was our wedding anniversary yesterday. 7 years married, and that's why I took the extra day off. So that's happy anniversary to you in advance of your wedding anniversary 7 years on. I was in the National Stadium, Dublin, with Johnny, a buddy of mine, after a barman and a local in Rathmines gave us the name of a backdoor guy who let us in for free to see herself, Suzanne Vega, singing Tom's Diner for the very first time. We were sitting in a separate area on our own like celebs, and she blew us both up a kiss. Good old Suzanne, says Wild Jimmy. And Ray, don't you know everything comes in trees? If you're from the Midlands, they do. Anyway, everything comes in trees. This, that and the other. Now, as we've been saying, Colm O'Regan is writing about the disappearance of our traditional petrol stations in the Irish Examiner. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, Colm?
I'm fine, thanks, Ray. And the good news is my request to join the Facebook group, The Golden Age of Irish Garages, Petrol Stations and Motor Assembly, has just been
yes,
approved.
So it's the little things. It's the little things, Colm. So was there a particular incident that alerted you to the fact that things were changing?
Well, it's an amalgamation of them, because it's sort of it was sparked by being at Exit 8, which in itself tells a story about how we talk about places on motorways. And we've lost kind of a sense of place now. Motorways are just like pipes that kind of pipe us around the country. And so we were at Exit 8 there late one night last week.
Where is Exit 8?
Exit 8 is the Cashel one on the Dublin Cork motorway.
Okay, right.
So we were, there's myself and wife and two children, one child asleep in the back and the eldest up the front with us eating chips and burgers in the dark, which is a special pleasure. There's nothing like eating fast food in the dark. It's like you're on a stakeout. Yeah. But it struck me that this is a different age of petrol stations. And then continued on the way home to Dripsea, and then along the way just pass all these, I suppose, fossilised petrol stations along the what are now the R roads and the L roads. And, you know, the petrol pumps are almost like pillars of an ancient civilization.
Yeah.
If they're still there, the last price per gallon frozen in time, and tractor diesel if they sold it. And it's just, you know, progress. I'm not going to hand the motorways back. We'd be glad of them. I'd be happy to tell my children about Monasterevin rather than forcing them to spend an hour being stuck there on the way down, because they don't know the struggles we had. I think it's reflected in what some of your listeners are talking about, and yourself as well too. There's a special relationship with the petrol station in that the petrol station got us out of a hole, in one way or another, either with fuel or fixing a car. I mean, the amount of times my father on some trip rattled into a petrol station with some, and there was a fella there who knew about cars. That's the other thing. You know, we have play pits in and ball pits in our petrol stations now, but no pit to look at the car. So it's just a symbol of some part of connectivity of countryside that sort of.
And they were mainly family run as well, we've established.
That's right.
The old petrol stations. And they lived within probably a few metres of the actual pumps.
Exactly, yeah. And of course, health and safety dictates people shouldn't really live that close to a flammable tank anymore. But I, the other thing I miss is, like, because often you talk about where do young people get work now? You know, so many jobs, farming jobs get kind of automated. And, you drive into a petrol station and a young lad would almost uncoil himself from a wall. You didn't see him. Like somebody, a young lad would suddenly appear at the window and, you know, you'd hand him the 20,
yeah, well, I fill
20
it up
pound
here.
Note. Fill it up, yeah. The world's most boring job, but still a job nonetheless. So it's kind of,
I'd forgotten
them.
About
there's
that.
There's a few of them around.
There was no need for you to get out of the car. You could I'd forgotten all about
whereas
that.
Now, social interaction is sort of, you know, you can fill up automatically at the petrol pump and you put in the amount and then, like, the petrol races in and then it slows to an absolute, you know, nap.
Oh, because you've paid the 50 euro or whatever.
You certainly wouldn't want to be on the run from lockdown or anything trying to get away from the petrol. You'd probably give back the euro spare at the end. Or, sometimes you go in to pay for petrol and somebody will try and interest you in a special chocolate offer. You want these four double deckers for 2 euro, which I think is a great idea.
Don't slag off the double decker.
The double decker is the most underrated of bars.
Look, we chatted about this because the double decker kept me awake over all those years driving around the country going to discos here and discos there. And you'd be driving back at 2 o'clock in the morning or 2:30 and you'd stop and you get a can of Coke and a double decker and it sets you up then you're fine to get back to Dublin without falling asleep.
That's
at the wheel.
Right, yeah.
Whatever they have in it.
All minerals. all the vitamins and minerals you needed.
No, just a lot of sugar, Colin. Just an awful lot of sugar and a bit of caffeine.
I've been that soldier at 2 a.m, definitely.
But they're going to become tourist attractions. We were down in Stonyford in County Kilkenny just before the lockdown, I think it was in January of this year. And they have, I think, two old petrol pumps in the middle of the town. They're not functional, but they've restored them. And it's a lovely photo opportunity.
Absolutely. I'm sure that's going to happen. Like Wi-Fi hubs. But I was thinking, actually, in talking to Neil, your researcher, about, I think all is not lost. I think that we need people, we'll need electricity charging points at more frequency than what the petrol stations, the current level of service station. I think there's still a job for a young lad or a young girl to mind the current. Scattered around the parishes to stop people taking all the battery power. Because let's assume we all have electric cars in 20 years' time. You know, petrol used to leak out of vehicles, but current leaks out of car, people leave on a radio or something. We're going to need more and more battery charging points.
That's a fair point.
To rescue rural Ireland is a series. You could even put them, you could co-locate them with the fella selling strawberries and potatoes on the road to Wexford.
And raspberries, they sell raspberries.
Exactly, yeah. So I think all is not lost.
I was just reading there in doing research for this item, Colin, that the profit margin on petrol has gone down over the years and that petrol stations had to start selling coffee and double-deckers and whatnot for financial reasons.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, diversification is what it's all about.
And the last statistics that I could find online were from 2008. And they said that there was a drop in 10 years. So from 1998 to 2008, a drop from 2,143 petrol stations to 1,092. And 12 years on, I'd imagine that's gone down further. So we're talking less than 1,000 countrywide now. Yeah. Just for your entertainment, I starred in a short film which was set in a forecourt
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that's what it's called. Is it forecourt.
Are you happy to... All right. Is it available online?
I don't know. I don't know why I've said that. I think it's first day back from holidays feeling enthusiastic and honest. No, I actually shouldn't have said that out loud.
Is this the misstep that gets you...
No.
Is this your Clifton...
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's all above board. I played the love interest of the young girl who works the petrol pump. Not even the love interest. She's infatuated. Odd, very. Anyway, there, it's out there. I shouldn't have even said that. Anyway, call Maureen, good luck. No, don't go.
I'm not going to Google straight away. I'll give it 5 minutes.
Yeah. Let's see what they're saying. Petrol pumps like that in Michelin, County Carlow, on way to Mount Leinster. And my neighbour had petrol pumps on New Street in Macroom. And a man coming home from the pub knocked them down one night, says Tim. That's the petrol pumps, not the neighbour. Talking about the old type petrol stations reminds me of the time I had to leave my sister as a deposit for payment of petrol. That's brilliant. It was in 1999 and I had no cash but a laser card. I called into a petrol station in Donegal and went in to pay and they only took cash. My only option was to travel back 15 miles to another petrol station and buy an RTE guide and get cash back and quickly to return and liberate my sister. That's a brilliant story. That's Anya Farley from Carney Ross in Kelsen County Meath. And got the fright of my life in a petrol station one time, sitting in a car while my husband paying for petrol. Some fella went to get into the car. I cursed him out of it. Poor lad just made a mistake and got cars mixed up. So there. Years ago, a friend of my brother had a job in a petrol station filling the cars up. He called himself a fuel injection engineer. Remember that? Yeah, and we used to stop in Kildare for chips on the way home from Cork, or tips as that person. And Wynn's Pub in Drumcairn still has this service, and you don't need to go into the pub. You knock on the house door. They're so friendly and have got me out of a tight corner many's the time on the way to Kildare.
I posted on Twitter, if you look at the hashtag, it's not exactly hopping, but I put it up there to keep them all together. Ireland's favourite filling station. Hashtag. Yes. There's a few nice replies on some places that are still in operation. Just that story about getting into the wrong car reminded me of a story. A friend of mine from a while back, they went to a match, came down, got into the car, parked at Houston Station, switched on the radio, and about 10 miles down the road realised, wait a minute, this car doesn't have a radio. Our car doesn't have a radio.
Oh, yes.
It was in the days when the keys would do more than one car.
All right.
It was the same make.
Yeah. There's a working petrol station in the middle of town in Capaquin in County Waterford. And can't beat the double deckers. Tail end of an 80 kilometre Sunday spin. I regularly call on it to get me home, says Ollie. So they're still working, double deckers, keeping people awake all over the country on long journeys.
Yeah.
I have that thing. Mine's a 2017 car. It has all these newfangled things. But if you're in the car for more than 2 hours, it alerts you to the fact that you need to stop. And it shows you image of a cup of coffee with steam coming out of it.
I thought you were going to say that it gives you a double decker.
No, it doesn't. What I was going to say is they should put an image of a double decker in it.
Yeah.
Oddly, and this is not me with some conspiracy theory, but it always seems to be close to one of those exit 8 or exit 17 type places.
Oh, it's big like data the, has it
exactly. Right, we'll talk again. How are you, Colm? You're gigging, your first live gig, are you, since lockdown?
Yeah, I've been throwing stuff at a wall to see what sticks in the absence of actual paid work over the last while. So news novel is out in the shop, so I launched that on Zoom, and then I have an online gig on Thursday. So three gigs coming up, two online, one in aid of a wildlife park down in Wexford, one for the Hope Foundation on Monday, but on Friday in the Theatre Royal in Waterford, properly socially distanced, correct legal. Right. There isn't another group hidden behind a partition gig. Tickets still available, because if we don't sell any more, it'll be very socially distanced. But it's down in Theatre Royal there
in Waterford.
And they're putting on a few shows.
Great.
In Waterford. And so if you're out and about, and it'll be safe as houses. First gig back live. I'll be making precisely 32 cents. I don't care. I just want to get on a stage and talk out.
Which is great. Well done to you, and well done to Theatre Royal as well, because it's small tentative steps, isn't it, to get back?
But the difference between nothing and a small thing is order of magnitude bigger than something and a bigger thing. You have to kind of break the inertia. There are rules there. You keep to them. The stuff is possible. Lots of stuff. I mean, you know, there was confusion last week about what could be allowed. We know what it is now, for good or for bad, and let's try and make the most of what we're allowed to do and spend the money locally, wherever you are, is my thing.
Theatre Royal, this Thursday, is it, Colm?
No, Friday.
Friday. Theatre Royal, Friday. This Friday, socially distanced gig. Colm O'Regan is chomping at the bit.
I haven't talked to anyone in years. I'll fill your time until Mary Wilson comes on, Ray, to be honest.
Thanks, Colm. Mind yourself. Good talking
to you.
See you now. Bye bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551, Ray at RTE.ie. My husband Declan Hare, H-E-H-I-R photographer, has documented all disused petrol pumps in our region here in Munster, says Alice Brennan. So Declan Hare, photographer, if you're interested in that sort of thing. And my parents had a retail and wholesale business in Bagnallstown with two Lobitos petrol pumps outside, diesel and petrol. As a young child, put diesel into a petrol car by mistake. Oh no! Biggest mistake of my life. And a good one too, because I was taken off duty, says Marie. Now, 51551 on radio.rte.ie. With us all staying on the island of Ireland, there's a lot more people holidaying and a lot more people using the waters both in and around our coastlines. And as a result, the RNLI are a lot busier, and there's been a few high-profile stories involving the RNLI over the last few weeks. So we decided we'd get a number of people who work with the RNLI onto the programme. So sitting in front of me, I have Damien Payne. How are you doing, Damien? Move in there to the microphone, don't be afraid of it. You don't have to social distance the microphone. And you'll need a pair of headphones as well, which we'll get for you, because in our Galway studio we have Mike Swan. How are you doing, Mike?
How are you doing, Ray? How are all the listeners?
Good, you're coming in loudly and clearly there. And then on the phone from Baltimore we have Kieran Cotter. How are you doing, Kieran? Hello, Kieran.
Hello, yeah, very good, yeah, grand.
Is it Kieran or Kieran?
Kieran. Spelled with a K.
Okay. So Damien, Mike and Kieran, you can all hear each other. Yes, everybody. Great.
Yeah.
So we better get where you work and what's your title, Damien?
I'm based in Dunleary Lifeboat Station in a volunteer capacity, and I'm a helmsman on our inshore lifeboat, and I'm a navigator on our all-weather lifeboat, and I'm currently training to be a coxswain on the all-weather lifeboat as well.
Okay. I'll have to get definitions of titles in a minute. Mike Swan, you're operations manager with the Galway RNLI.
Yes, Lightboat. That's correct.
Yeah. And would you have done other roles, fulfilled other roles over the years?
Yeah, I also work in the Port of Galway. And I also, in the lifeboat, I was a helm and also a crew member over the years, you know.
Right. And Kieran Cotter, then you were, coxswain, is it?
Coxswain, yeah.
Yeah. Is that the boss man?
That's the fellow, the skipper.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Well, just another couple of things that we need to, you might give us definitions. So there's inshore and all-weather boats.
Yeah. All-weather boats. They're usually 14 metres and upwards, can go to sea in all-weather conditions. And then the smaller boats are called inshore.
Yeah.
They're up to 8.5 metres and will go out in weather conditions up to 4-7.
Okay. And are the all-weather ones the ones that can actually go over, completely go over and come back and right themselves?
Well, they all have a self-righting capability.
Oh, do they? Okay.
You know.
Right. Oh, they all have. Okay.
The inshore boats have an inflatable bag. So when the boat goes over a certain distance, there's a mercury switch and it sets off it fills the bag so the boat will return upright.
Right. Now, seeing as you're the longest-serving member of the RNLI, Kieran, we'll talk to you first. So is it all volunteers in the RNLI?
In most stations, there's one full-time person, usually the mechanic, and in some stations where they can't get a coxswain, they have a paid coxswain.
Okay.
In my case, I've been coxswain, a volunteer coxswain for the last over 30 years.
And you've people from all walks of life?
People from all walks of life, you know, nurses, doctors, politicians, everything.
Yeah, and the pager is your connection with, I suppose, a crisis. That's the way it works.
Yes, yeah. Like this morning at about 8:25, my pager went off and we had to go off out to Crookhaven. A couple of yachts were in difficulty out there.
And was it a happy ever after story?
Oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah. We'd started them out. Yeah, they were dragging their moorings and we just put out new other anchors for them and connect with more ropes out, and they were grand.
And is there a noticeable increase in call-outs because of people staying at home this year?
No, we're not finding that.
Okay,
Okay. No, we're finding a very quiet summer.
Okay.
In actual fact, we had no call-out between January and July this year, which is has never been heard of before. And since July, we have had the usual amount of call-outs.
Okay. Let's go to Mike Swan, their operations manager with the Galway RNLI lifeboat. So you were involved in the search for Ellen and Sarah on the paddle boards.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. We were out there all night. It was a fairly long service, around 15 hours, you know.
Do you call it a shout or a service? I'm getting used to all this jargon.
Well, there's call out, shout, service, all the same, really.
They're all the same thing. Okay, right. Who would take that call then? What happens?
Initially, I got the phone call from the Coast Guard saying that there was two overdue paddleboarders off Furbo. And so then basically from there, then it just said we'd set our pages off and notify the crew then to turn up at the station and head out to sea then, you know.
Hmm. You've been talking to Ellen and Sarah quite recently.
Yeah, I had a chat with them there yesterday where we met them there for a cup of coffee there. So good chat with them. So they're all in good health now. So hopefully they'll be able to cope for the next couple of weeks, you know.
Yeah.
It will dwell in their mind, I suppose.
Will that alert people to, I suppose, the danger surrounding paddleboards? Because paddleboards are relatively new, aren't they?
They are. Well, to be honest with you, it's an 8-foot board. It's very much like a surfboard, except for it's full of air. They inflate them, and literally these things float literally on top of the water, and it's totally wind that kind of acted and set them. Like those boards, if the girls hadn't tied up to the lobster pot there, those boards could have travelled in nearly 12 hours, nearly close to 30 miles, you know.
Right.
So it's some travel, you know.
That would have been a different and tragic story, I would imagine.
We never give up hope, you know.
No. And what's the advice? Should you wear a wetsuit? Should you wear a life jacket?
Yeah, you know, there's wetsuits, life jackets. There's the life jackets, make sure they have whistle, lights. There's PLBs out there. You got a personal
locator.
What's
a PLB? Oh,
it's like a satellite kind of beacon thing.
Right.
So personal locator device.
Yeah.
And the range, I was into one of the shops there in Galway. They're selling for €250. So, do you know, how much is your life worth, you know?
Yeah,
so,
But if you're doing a bit of casual paddleboarding, probably 250 quid is a stretch too far.
Well, you know, it's where you do it then you need to take care, you know, watch the weather and all the precautions.
So, Mike, you're the operations manager. So does everything come through you? I think people get a bit confused because the Coast Guard, they're all full-time, aren't they? The Coast Guard, and that's the helicopters part of
it. Yeah, well, the Coast Guard are basically, we work under the Coast Guard. It's like one big umbrella. So we're part of their kind of team. So the Coast Guard, the Marine Rescue Subcenter down in Valencia, it would be my kind of connection with the Coast Guard. And once we're tasked, they're the ones that would be tasking us for a service. And they also then have, in Galway Bay, for instance, we have the Iron Islands, which is a RNLI all-weather boat. Then we also have Doolin Coast Guard Station, which have like an inshore boat. And also on Rosseville side, Costlow, they have an inshore boats as well. So like we are fairly well covered on the bay. And of course then Shannon is right on our doorstep. So we have the rescue helicopter there. So they're kind of...
And were all of those boats called in for the search for the two girls?
Yes, they were, yeah. And also we had the Sligo helicopter came to help then on rotation, and we also had the Waterford rescue helicopter on rotation as well. So, like, to be honest with you, we have a very good multi-agency search team in Galway. We draw on the likes of, you know, the Civil Defence. We have Ormore, Mary Rescue Coastal Units. We also have local fishermen, fishermen all around the bay.
Patrick and Morgan Oliver were the ones who, I suppose, and they have local knowledge and they're out on the sea every day.
Can't beat it, you know. Yeah. And like even with Patrick will tell you, you know, there's like definitely, you know, there was Garage Cadire up there by Barna. You had Jerry Sweeney down in near New Quay. See, all those local fishermen, they were all out searching that day, and they all had their spots, and they knew. And likewise with Patrick, he kind of came to us and he told us where he was heading, and so you know, it is. It's a big bay. You know, a lot of people kind of go, oh, it's a bit of water. Surely you'd see, you know, how can you not see them?
Yeah.
But if you were to get in your car and drive to Ballinasloe, for instance, from Galway, and then go, say, from Loch Ray to Toome, and that big area, think of all the fields there. And then
that's Galway Bay.
Two girls you're looking for, and also it's nighttime and it's raining, thunder, lightning, and the visibility is right down. So it wasn't easy. But we had a plan, and we were sticking to the plan, you know.
And
so
it worked
the
out.
Coast Guard, you know, you have to weigh up everything. You're looking also, were they still on the board? So you had to, you know, build it all into a search and rescue plan. So there was a lot happening in the background, you know.
And it's great that they were found.
Oh, yeah. We were over the moon, you know. Absolutely.
Damien is in studio here. He's feeling left out. He's nodding in agreement most of the time there. Damien, why did you join the RNLI?
Well, I suppose I moved up to Dunleary. I'm from Cork originally, from Monkstone and Cork, and I moved up in 2012 to Dunleary, and I found myself working from a home office. And growing up by the sea in Cork, Monkstone experienced its fair share of sea tragedy as well. And I felt it was something to give back to the community. So I knocked on the door, I signed up, and 3 years ago, we bought our first house in Dunleary, and we had to base the purchase based on the radius from the lifeboat station.
All right.
So it does get into your blood.
So you have to be within how many miles from
You have to be able to. The boat normally launches anytime between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on what the call is.
Right.
So when the pager goes off, you leave what you're doing, you drop everything, and you head to the lifeboat station, whether that's work, whether that's a family meal. The pager goes and you leave, and you could be 1 minute having a dinner with your family, and the next minute you could be at sea going off to rescue someone. So it's quite exciting.
And all the training is provided by the RNLI.
Yeah, the RNLI train volunteers up from scratch. So only 1 in 10 volunteers come from a maritime profession. So they train them up from scratch through on-station training, lifeboat college and pool. And all that training and the cost of the training comes from voluntary donations. So it costs approximately €1,600 a year to train a volunteer, which is it's quite a lot of money.
Now we've talked about a good news story there, but there are a lot of tragedies at sea, and sometimes rescues become recoveries.
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember your first recovery?
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone will forget their first recovery, and you know, over the years it happens, but there's a strong team around you to provide you with that support afterwards. I think for any volunteer crew member, a recovery is difficult, but you're doing so in the knowledge that you're bringing someone back to their loved one as well. So it's quite important to be able to do that. And we do have the support of our crew members, and the RNLI does have a support line as well for us to ensure that we're okay afterwards, because it is important to talk about that stuff after it happens.
Yeah. Kieran, there's been a number of high profile tragedies down your neck of the woods over the years. And you would have been involved, wouldn't you, in the searches?
Yeah, since I joined back in 1995, we have had, there's about 50 people have lost their lives in our patch. And we had the T-Bone Ham in 2012, there was five people lost their lives. We had a trawler, I think it was 202 or 201. Four people lost their lives in St. Gervais, out of Castleton Bear. And then 5 years ago, we had three people washed off the rocks here locally. And then you'd have people go out in boats falling overboard, people being washed off rocks. Of course, we have had the odd suicide as well. And so in total, there's been about 50 people in the 45 or 46 years I've been involved.
And what about you and your own personal safety and your loved ones fearing for your life?
Well, I suppose you get into the RNLI, and I think the boats and the training and everything is so good nowadays. I think the fear of getting injured or lost at sea is very, very small.
Okay.
And I would think that, especially a community like Baltimore, the lifeboats have been there for over 100 years. There's been never a casualty from the lifeboat crew. No, it has happened in other stations like Kilmore Quay and places like that. I think that the training and the boats and the equipment and everything is so good today that that fear is probably diminished. They're very small.
I see that horrific story from Donegal. Geraldine Mullen, who lost her husband and her two children there in that tragedy, she paid tribute to Kevin Barr of the RNLI, who arrived at the scene. And you're in the middle of those family tragedies, and it's like, and then you have to go home to your own family. It's a difficult one, isn't it, that you choose to make that part of your life?
It's difficult, but it's still part of your life. And I think people that are involved in the RNLI, for that matter, any of the life-saving services, even ambulance and all that, I mean, it's the same for everyone. You're trained up, your family expect that at some stage you will have to go out and that there will be a major tragedy.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
Your term has been extended at sea, Kieran. I believe your retirement age, and because of COVID, they've given an extra few months. Is that it?
Yeah, I was to retire. I was 65 at the end of June, so I was to retire at 65, and I just done my medical in May, so they asked me to stay on until Christmas, even though my replacement and everything is in place.
Right.
But they decided they'd ask me, and I'll be there now until the new year.
Okay.
And after that, I'll be gone.
And Mike, where does the funding come from for the RNLI?
It comes from all the flag days, the soup days, the boxes in all the bars that are all closed at the moment. So the old collections are down, as you know. So a lot of people do a lot of fundraising events as well around the coast. Like in Galway, we have a great fundraising team, and I think we average in around between 60 and 70,000 euros a year. So it's tough when you go asking for money, but like all the crew, when they go out doing fundraising events, we're not really, I suppose a lot of us will be shy, but at the same token, when you're shaking a box in the streets, it's amazing how many people come up and say, "That's a great organisation, yes. I'd love to support," you know.
And I think people know that one day they may need you, or somebody they love may need you. Just to say, I ran into the sea in a pair of Wellingtons one day. Just to that's the sort of fundraisers you do, isn't it?
That's it. The yellow belly, the yellow wellies.
Is that it? Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what I did some years ago. It's good crack. So you're in the hierarchy then. Who's top then? You're top, are you, Kieran? And then, Damien, you're at the bottom.
I'm right at the bottom.
Or Mike, are you top there, operations manager?
Well, I wouldn't say that, because I was kind of kicked off the boat when I was in my early days. In an inshore, our station's an inshore boat station, and back in the day, when once you turned 45, you had to step down. But we had the operations manager. You can be the manager in the station until you're 70.
Uh-huh.
And so what happened to me was that the operations manager at the time, he turned 70. So I was kicked off the boat and took over his job when I was in my 30s, you know. So,
and you've been there ever since.
So, yeah.
What about women?
Yeah, we have a good food crew in our station. We have around 6 crew in our station.
So what's the ratio, do you reckon, around the country?
I couldn't tell you around the country, but...
We've got one on our crew at the
just
one
out
crew
of,
at the moment.
Out of many?
One out of about 28 volunteers at the moment.
Okay,
but, I mean, it's open to... volunteering is open to anyone from age 17. You're trained up from scratch, and we do need volunteers, because one thing Kieran mentioned there, that there was very few shouts during COVID. Actually, in Dunleary, we've had 62 shouts to date, whereas last year and the whole year, we would have only had 48 in total. Our shout number has gone up simply because there's more people around the water, on the water, in the water, as a result of staycationing.
Yeah, you see, Baltimore would be a holiday destination, so people couldn't have gone there, whereas you have a huge population around Dunleary.
Absolutely.
Within 5K or 20K as they expanded the restrictions. Well, listen, if you can, I'm putting out the call, if you can help your local RNLI, please do, because one day you may need them, or somebody you love may need them. Lads, thanks so much for taking time out today to talk to us. Damien Payne from Dunleary RNLI, Mike Swan from Galway, and Kieran Carter from Baltimore. Thank you all. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
Cheers, Ray.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gramaga, Kieran. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie, RNLI.org. RNLI.org if you want to donate to the RNLI. And Somebody's saying there, I've personal experience of losing loved ones to the sea. The RNLI are extraordinary people. As a family, we were lucky to have our loved ones brought home to us, and the grief of their loss was lessened slightly by the comfort of having them to lay them to rest. They will never know how much their selfless actions are appreciated. There are no words, says that person. And Sinead was asking what the age limit is, and Damien said 17. 17 is the age limit there. And they provide all the training. You travel to the UK, I think, where there's a dedicated training facility there. On petrol pumps, 4 years ago, I was home from the UK house hunting down in Tipperary. On the way back to my sister's home in Lucan, we stopped at the Obama Centre in Moneygall. I filled up with petrol and then went in for a coffee and sandwich. When we had our fill, we paid for our food and left. Shortly after arriving at my sister's in Lucan, I got a call from a Garda to tell me that I had failed to pay for my petrol and supplied me with the manager's number. I was absolutely mortified and immediately phoned the manager and explained that I had forgotten about filling up and assured him that I would return immediately to pay my debt, at which point he casually told me not to worry and I could pay the next time I was in the area. I was gobsmacked at his understanding. Needless to say, I went down the next day and paid my debt. Oh, you went right back down from Lucan. That's Francis O'Neill. Would that have been Henry VIII? You know, Henry VIII, isn't that, you know, the man who's related to Barack Obama? He's the manager down there. Well, he was the last time I was down there, yeah. Paddleboards, as with any boat, if you go on the water after work, be aware there are only a few hours of daylight left to see. You should, if anything goes wrong. And back to petrol pumps. Story of running out of petrol late one night going from Skibbereen, County Cork. Was doing some research for the BBC Northern Ireland on a programme about author William Trevor. Spent too much time socialising and panic set in when I eventually left Skibbereen and kept going. I saw a small crowd coming out of a pub with a petrol pump across the road. I stopped and they found the owner and filled the car. What a relief. Let's keep these small petrol garages going. They deserve our support more than ever now, says Verna Hyde. How are you doing, Verna? And there is such a garage in Carluck on the Leitrim Cavan border. The woman there got me out of trouble late one night, says Brendan in Leitrim. And Jim Strang's Peugeot garage in the beautiful village of Kilsheelan, Clonmel, has a petrol attendant, the friendly Dennis. And that's from a satisfied customer, Anne. And we're still selling car and tractor diesel on the roadside here in Ahagower near Westport, County Mayo. Regards, J.P. Scott. There you go. Now, joining me in studio is Gerry Daly. How are you doing, Gerry?
Very good, Ray.
It's a big day.
It's the finale of the competition that has been running all summer. And what a, yeah. What a wet day to celebrate.
Finale, as my 8-year-old...
Finale.
Yeah, I said, that's finale. No, it's spelled finale, Daddy. Finale. It's the finale. So we've been asking people for the last few months to send us in pictures and descriptions of their gardens, and particularly work they have done during lockdown. And Borbia and Growmore and everybody else have given us 5,000 euro to give away. So what we have to do today is announce 5 runners-up in our 5 categories and then a winner. And the 5 runners-up get 100 euro each, and then the winner gets 500 euro in cash.
So there's 30 prizes in all.
Yes. We have a lot of work to do between now and 4:30, Gerry. How are you?
Great.
Yeah.
Have it all here.
You have it all there. You're ready to go. What was the standard like?
Standard was very good. Very good. Very imaginative. People really got stuck in. People who maybe hadn't done any gardening before found it very interesting. And I think there's thousands and thousands of new gardeners have been made as a result.
Which is great.
Because people got satisfaction.
They
realised you can actually, gardening isn't a chore, it's fun. And they've discovered that for themselves now.
And is it a form of productive mindfulness? You know, like when you're doing the garden, you can sort of just leave the world behind.
Yeah, well, I think it's been around long before mindfulness was around.
I think mindfulness was there since the beginning of time. Probably hadn't named it. But,
possibly.
Right, okay. Now, 5 categories. So there's the lockdown garden, and then I'm just looking through here, so I have all the categories before we go. There's the most colourful garden, there's the portrait, there's the veggie patch, and then there's the small space. So they're the 5 categories.
That's right, yeah.
Just in no particular order, we'll start with the lockdown garden.
Okay.
I'll announce the runners-up in no particular order. Mary McCarthy, Andrew Martin, Anthony and Pauline Boogie, Patrick Kerry and Paul Ferry. Congratulations to all of you. And the winner, drum roll, of the lockdown garden section, the winner of 500 euro, Fiona Liston. How are you doing, Fiona?
Hi, how are you? Hi, Ray. Hi, Gerry.
How are you doing?
Well done.
Great, thank you. Sorry, I'm like more nervous here than I was on my wedding day.
And you have a good memory of that, because your wedding day was when?
So I suppose with us, our initial wedding date was June 5th, which, like so many other couples, we had to postpone with COVID. So we actually got married on the 13th of August. So, what, 2 weeks ago on Thursday.
Okay. And this is all connected, isn't it? Because what I'm looking at here, this wonderful transformation of your backyard. is thanks to your honeymoon fund.
Yes. So, obviously, when, like every couple, you really look forward to your honeymoon. And we had 3 weeks touring California and America in July as our honeymoon. And obviously, we could see everything unfold, and we knew that this is not going to be a possibility. So I'm a primary school teacher, so obviously I hadn't been at school since the 12th of March. So I was looking out at this abyss, I don't even know what you'd call it, and the weather was fine. And I said, we have to do something with this. We're not going to get away on honeymoon, so let's go with our back garden as our honeymoon destination.
Right. So, and you said, Fergal, we have to do something with this.
It's terrible.
Yeah. So there's a nice story about the house as well. You were renting the house, were you?
Yes. So we were actually renting this house, and the opportunity came up then to buy it. And just completely coincidentally, our mortgage came through with the approval and everything on the 14th of February, which was Valentine's Day. So we purchased the house and had it in our name then from the 14th of February. But we had been living in the house for 3 years. But I suppose, as many renters know, you don't want to invest too much money into a property when you don't know if you're actually going to be staying in it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go over to Gerry Daly now, because he judged it. What impressed you most about the transformation of Fiona and Fergal's garden?
Well, it was a total transformation. I mean, it was
the standard
3 foot of concrete path around the house, a bit of grass that had seen better life.
Definitely.
And fences and walls. And they transformed it into a very modernistic, quite imaginative space, as a leisure space with seating and with tables and so on.
And, yeah, I think that was really what we wanted to create. Was we've actually nicknamed it and got a sign called the Snug. So we wanted to create a room outside. That was our house is a terraced house, not a very big house, but we wanted to be able to entertain out there, which is something we couldn't do. So it was to create a room outside, basically, what we wanted to do.
Well, you've done that hugely successfully. We're going to put a picture up on our website. It's a pity this isn't telly, but down in one of the corners, you've created probably, 8 foot walls, sort of a corner?
Yes. They were 8 foot. You know, we did it according to planning. You know, however much you can go without needing planning.
And then you've an L-shaped seating area underneath that. And what you've done, which is very clever and very attractive, and probably not that expensive, in the walls, you've set in sort of a recess. That's the word I was looking for. What's it called? What's the official title of it?
It's called. He'll be very proud of me now when he hears this. My lingo. It's called a recess wall.
Right.
So it's to take the kind of very concrete look off something, so that you can inset something into the wall. Like, we just have pots in there at the moment.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was really a group effort with what we did. I have to say, from the minute we started the project, we had an old kind of falling down shed, and it wasn't in our budget to purchase a new shed. So I went out with my paint and painted it, but we needed to move the shed, which was not going to be an easy task.
Right.
And I have to thank my dad for coming with a very innovative idea, which was getting poles. And Fergal and my dad actually rolled the garden shed.
They would have done that in the pyramids, Gerry, wouldn't they?
Yeah, it was actually stuff we were doing.
That's what they did. That's how they moved the big rocks. They put it onto poles and rolled it along. Yeah,
and Roland, that's how we moved the shed, because if we knew if we had to take it apart, we'd never get it back together again.
So you had a few slaves moving the shed.
Oh, God. They won't like that.
No, your father and Fergal. And well, listen, congratulations. It's a wonderful transformation.
Amazing.
And I think it's money well spent. I know, you know, you can go to America some other time, but you have a lovely area there. A lovely area that this weekend, Fiona, you can celebrate winning our Grow More competition and €500 in cash.
Thank you so much. It's such a surprise. I'd actually even forgotten nearly that I had sent them in. I sent them in so long ago, and it's just to get the call was just amazing.
Well,
and you've just made
it's well deserved. And buy a few plants, Fiona.
I actually it's so wind battered at the moment.
I know.
You with the agapanthus might need to be taken up, I'd say, now with this wind. Oh,
it'll be lovely, lovely this time of year.
It's just so lovely, and we appreciate it so much. And thank you.
I won't spoil it all by saying something stupid like, how are you getting ready for school? So we'll just leave it there. Okay, Fiona. See you now. Bye. That's our first winner today. That's a wonderful transformation there. As I say,
it's a very good high level of design.
Yeah.
Of design.
It looks like a professional job, doesn't it?
It does, very much so. Yeah.
We should have said that to her while she was on. Anyway, so it's the Board Be A Grow More competition. It's been going for the last few months, and today we are announcing the winners in the veggie patch. And I'd say this is something that a lot of people turned their hand to, thought it was too difficult, and probably doing it for the first time, as you say. So the runners up, Vera Nolan and her son Niall. Their neighbour, Shan, was impressed by their work and entered them. So well done to you. Emma Perry, well done to you. Arthur Moore, Siobhan Collins, Niamh and Dave McCormick. And Isabella Flynn is our winner. How are you doing, Isabella?
Oh my gosh, wow. Thank you so much. Fantastic.
Whereabouts in the country are you?
I'm in Galway City.
Right, okay. And are you new to this gardening lark?
Yes, I am very much. This is... just 2 years ago, I bought a house with my husband, so it was my first time ever having a garden.
Ah.
And then on the 12th of March, we had to cease our daily work. I'm also a teacher.
Right.
And so I just thought it's a great time to get stuck in, and the weather was lovely, and I always wanted to grow, so yeah.
So you've a polythene tunnel, you've raised beds.
Yes.
Very impressive for somebody who hasn't done it before. I'll go over to our gardening guru, Jerry Daly, to comment on why you were chosen as winner.
Yeah, it is. It is impressive. And it looks like the work of somebody who's been doing vegetable growing for a few years at least. And
that's very kind of you, Jerry.
It's true. There's lots of stuff in it, and it's all looking very nice and healthy. And you've grown in different ways. You have little beds, and you have the tunnel and the open border as well, so it's very well achieved.
What are you growing there, Isabella?
Oh, I've a lot of stuff. I have a lot of fruit: plum, apple, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries. I've a little fig tree that didn't really work, but however. And I've tomatoes, cucumber, kale, turnip, chard, spinach, salads, and about 20 different herbs, and then flowers to attract all the bees.
And you are now able to go out, pick from the garden, and it's on your plate, ready to eat within half an hour.
Oh, within 5-10 minutes. I'm doing that every day now. And we're all enjoying the fruits of the labour now, which is great.
Yeah.
And you're discovering for the first time, I imagine, the brilliant taste of really, really fresh vegetables.
Oh, exactly, Jerry. Yeah, and it's all completely organic as well, so that they all taste quite different to what you would buy on a shelf.
Right. They do, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And they even look different as well.
Will you be able to go back?
No. I'll stick with this, I think.
Yeah,
excellent.
So you're deputy principal in a primary school.
Yes.
Again, I won't ask you about the preparations, but that's another day's work. But you will be, do your students know how successful a gardener you are?
Not particularly. We have a polytunnel in the school, which we had put in about 2 years ago, and I kind of look after that. And then this summer I asked a caretaker to put in some raised beds, and just for the children's well-being and everything, I've decided I'm going to use outside our classroom and the raised beds as
much as possible,
almost a classroom.
Very good.
Yeah, so I've bought some seeds, autumn seeds and stuff for them to sow.
And what's been a revelation to you, Isabella, in your 2 years of doing the gardening?
Oh, golly. Growing sweet corn in the rest of Ireland, I think. I really didn't think that would work, but it worked quite well.
Okay.
Yeah.
How are you going to spend your very large cash prize, €500?
Oh, I'm delighted with it. Thanks so much. I'll buy lots of seeds, I think, for the children in school, and I'll make some more improvements to my garden.
Any last words of advice, Jerry, before we let Isabella go?
Yeah, buy a peach tree for the greenhouse.
Right.
Lovely idea. Thanks, Jerry.
There you go.
Great. Thanks very much.
Right. Well done, Isabella.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye. We've only two categories done, Jerry. We're slow. That's my fault. First day back and all that. Most colourful. This was probably a difficult one. There was a lot of colour in the pictures that I saw over the last few weeks. A lot of colour.
It was a tricky one. There was at least 20 contenders. At least 20 contenders.
The runners-up, who all get €100 each, Mary Kennedy, Evelyn Russell, John Malone, Jack Duff and Geraldine Cronin. Well done to you all. But the winner is Angela Mannion in Clare Hall. How are you doing, Angela?
Oh, hi. Oh, I'm absolutely thrilled.
Well done, Angela.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I was hanging on there and I thought I was just going to be one of the runners-up. Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you.
No, you're like, it's an explosion of colour, your garden. It's a compact enough space. What are the dimensions of it?
It's about it's about 34 foot long by 22 wide thereabouts. Right. So it's not a huge garden. No, it's not.
And what have you got in it? Give us a throw out a few names there.
Well, shrub wise, I'm great. I love colourful shrubs first of all, and I, you know, the standard ones like the hydrangeas and so on. I have an Acer in a shrub, the Acer palmatum, in the middle of the garden.
Yes.
And I have a lovely rose which I've had for a long time, which is Gertrude Jekyll. It's a beautiful rose, and it has just come back again. It has come on second run this time, so it's looking good. Believe it or not, this morning I woke up, Ray, pulled back the curtains, and a tree was down at the back of my garden.
No. From Francis. Yeah.
It's luckily it fell into the garden. So it's actually a huge shrub. It's about nearly 20 foot high.
I'm looking at it here when I was standing. It's behind that shrub you've described there, is it? Just behind the shed. Is that
yes,
it? Yes. I'm looking at it here in the photograph, yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
No, I can't see it falling down. I'll just have to imagine that part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll tell you something. So that was some shock. So this is such a lovely surprise makes up for that array now.
And Jerry Daly's here. And Jerry, what attracted you to this particular garden?
Well, as I said, it was a difficult, it's a very, very close competition between a number of people. But I felt that... that Angela's design was a bit of everything. There was pot plants, there were shrubs, there was trees, there was one or two conifers, I think, as well. Rose, that Gertrude Jekyll rose, which looks almost like a camellia.
Yes, that's right.
But it's big round flowers, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
And the combination just worked. I thought it worked very nicely together.
I'd say it brings you a lot of joy.
Oh,
Angela.
Absolutely. I mean, during COVID, it's because I had to cocoon. It was just the most wonderful experience to sit there in that lovely weather that we had,
yes,
and
May.
Just absolutely, you know, enjoy just looking at the plants. I could just sit there just looking and watching the birds as well, and just. I could sit there for hours just looking at the different plants and at the birds and all of that, and it was wonderful. It was when you have the weather to sit out, there's nothing like it.
The red umbrella went nicely with your red colour theme.
Well spotted, Jerry.
Well spotted, Jerry. Yes.
And as well as that, you're obviously a very, very assiduous waterer of plants in pots. Because they're tip-top condition.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Well, done. €500 in the post here. Thanks, Angela. That's
fantastic. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Take care.
That's
Bye.
Angela Mannion and Clare Hall. We still have two categories to go. Best use of space and garden portrait. They're coming up after this.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Just to mention as well, before we carry on, that Greencastle Coast Guard were involved in the rescue
of Geraldine Mullen up in Mobile in County Donegal. That terrible family tragedy there. Now, we're in the middle of our Growmore Board Bia competition announcement. Gerry Daly's with us. We had hundreds of entries from all over the country. People sent us photographs of their gardens and their veggie patches and portraits of children and gnomes and dogs and cats and all sorts of things. Now, first we go to we best use of space to do and also garden portrait, and we'll go to the portrait first. And this we asked them to capture something other than the garden in the garden. And we got loads of different types of things. And well done to Sarah Hutchinson, Sarah De Vaccaren, Lorraine O'Hara, Maureen Carr and Roisin Dunn. They're runners-up and they get €100 each. And our winner in garden portrait category is Karen Dillon. Well done, Karen.
Hello, Ray.
How are you?
Lovely to talk to you.
You're in Drumlish in Longford.
That's it.
And it's a beautiful photograph. Talk us through it. It's your son.
That's him, Alex, sitting on the swing in the middle of a holy thunder and shower of rain. And I'm standing with the phone yelling at him to come in out of the rain.
Yes.
But I was in the kitchen that morning. It was end of June. We were probably, the start of that rainy season was coming, and he was just sitting staring at the cows, watching the cows go in under a tree out of the rain. And it just caught me. It just caught me looking at him. I did pause, but I still went for the phone and I was still yelling at him while I was taking the photo. But yeah. It was a good one. He has his sweatband on too. The hair was getting long in the middle of lockdown, and it's just one of those moments.
It's a lovely photograph because you get the rain and you get Alex there, and then beyond Alex you have the cows, and he's going, I'm not coming in until the cows come home.
Yeah, you know right.
So,
beautifully composed picture.
Isn't it? Yeah. And is it a sort of a meadow type vibe in the garden, is that?
Oh yeah, we're a bit wild. We kept it wild. We kept, there's a ditch you can see between the two fields at the back, and we kept any fields that trees that were up around the house too, in the ditch, so we drained out and kept any trees, and we just like it a bit like that.
And what's the purple here? What's the purple there, Gerry?
It looks like catmint, I think, is it?
I'll take your word
for it. Bottom left hand corner, and there's some lovely grasses. It's really, it's almost has an impressionistic quality about it.
Yes, it's nearly like a painting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. Have you got any training in photography or?
Oh, in photography, no, and in gardening, less.
Well, whatever about gardening, you're a natural photographer anyway.
Well, thanks for that.
Yeah, because it's just
superb. It's very atmospheric.
Yeah, we're going to put that up. It's just it's a lovely photograph. It's a lovely photograph. It's a lovely one to have. You should. We might do that for you. Well, maybe we won't. We won't have time. But you should get that framed. You should get blow that up and get it framed.
I'll surely have to now.
That'll be something to treasure. It'll be something to treasure.
Yeah.
And €500 on its way to you. Sorry, we can't talk more, Karen, but we're running out of time. Well
nice
done.
To both of you.
Bye
thank
now.
You.
Bye. That's Karen Dillon
just
there.
Just to briefly mention, Ray, the other in the same category, there's a fantastic picture of pheasant.
Yes.
There's a lovely picture of a roadside tribute to people with COVID, the COVID virus. And there's a picture of a robin, tiny little robin, feeding a huge cuckoo.
Oh. We need a wildlife expert for that. Right, right. They're all brilliant. And thanks to everybody who entered. And well done to the winners. Now, last category, best use of space. And this is a lot of people have small little patches or balconies or whatever. And we've got loads again. And the runners-up, Anne Pearl, Gay O'Brien, Kathleen can be White or Wild, it says here, Tracy McGuinness and Linda Masterson. So all of you get €100 each. And the winner in our best use of space category, Rachel Perkins. Congratulations, Rachel.
Oh my God, thanks so much. I'm delighted.
Yeah, you're in Stonybatter in Dublin. Not a lot of space around there, not a lot of big gardens. But
yeah,
you've
that's
done
right.
Wonderful work. How big is your space?
Oh, it's tiny. It's, probably about 7 or 8 metres squared.
Right.
Yeah, so it's literally just a backyard at the back of the house.
And how new are you to gardening?
Completely new.
Okay.
Haven't done any gardening before, but my mom is a keen gardener, and she's often given me bits and pieces, and she's the one who encouraged me to send the photos in.
Okay. Yes. Jerry, well, yes. What have you got to say?
It's very nicely done. There's lots and lots of pots of various kinds and various plants in them. But one thing that I thought was very clever and worked extremely well was that you patterned the floor.
Yeah.
The floor was concrete. You painted it white, and then you did a stencil sort of thing onto it, which made it look like Mediterranean tiles. Completely changes the atmosphere of the whole space.
It's brilliant. It is actually brilliant.
Thanks very much.
Your cheat worked perfectly on me, because I was trying to figure out what was going on there. So it's you've no tiles. It's just a stencil.
It's just stencils, yeah. And that took an awful lot longer than I had anticipated.
Well, it was well worth the effort. €500 the richer now, Rachel Perkins.
Sorry, we can't talk longer.
But well done on that. And we'll put your picture up on the website so people can see how impressive your stenciling was. Well done, Rachel.
Thanks very much.
Jerry, thanks for everything. We're still getting questions in for you, so we're going to have you back.
Wonderful.
This isn't the end of our relationship.
Oh, that's good.
Right, great. And thanks for everything on that. And thanks to Grow More and Board Bia and everybody who entered. That's it from us. Mary Wilson's on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.